So what shall we look at this morning? Star 6 to unmute.
This is Jan.
Jan.
Hi. Wow, there's just a lot I'm looking at. And so I don't forget, thank you for the beautiful Musings article, which has was such a huge contribution to my practice. So I guess I'm calling partly to share what I'm seeing and for support. My mom, who's 98, lives in assisted living, and coronavirus just hit that building that she lives in this week. And I think we all sort of know, what can happen there. So what I'm watching and practicing with in this is what I've looked at in the year-long and the Socratic, which is, participation, what that looks like internally and externally with this content. And likewise with the Socratic, looking at right now, doubt and fear, and how that comes up.
So doubt and fear and how that comes up.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing, Jen?
Well, what I'm noticing, I had, when my dad passed away over a decade ago, there was a lot of suffering. There was a lot of suffering around that, and I learned from that. And so what I'm practicing with what I mentioned with the Socratic and the year-long related to this is seeing how it doesn't matter when or what, how conditioning baits for suffering and where, what I can turn to, what I have to turn to at any time, and practicing with that. And I guess to be more specific, it's especially at night, it'll be all these horror stories coming in, and just, no, I'm not going there. And practicing with going to the heart, that what I want is unconditional love. That's what this person needs. That's what we all need with all that's going on in the world. And conditioning just happens to be using this particular content to pull me off at, all the time. But that practice has that coming back in every way possible in all the tools we have has been life-saving. has been life-saving to not going. I mean, it isn't all the time. There is suffering at times, but I know how, I know what to turn to. I know what the options are.
So I think if I'm following you, Jen, I think what you're saying is, I project what you're saying is that whatever the content, the process of suffering is using that content in order to create suffering. And you've seen that. You've seen that in the content where your father died, in this particular content with your mom and the assisted living facility. And so it actually doesn't matter. I think what you're saying is it doesn't matter what the suffering, what the content is. You can see that the suffering process is attempting to get your attention and get you out of the moment, and that you are feeling somewhat successful in seeing that process and using the tools of practice not to become identified with that process and suffer as a consequence.
Yes, thank you. And again, it's not that I don't get caught sometimes, but that's just what happens no matter what the content is. And I guess what I'm noticing most of all is the difference now after many more years of practice and what happened way back when with my dad and the processes that went on there. And I'm just so grateful. I guess that's where I end up turning almost all the time is there's so much to be grateful for here. Look at all the years as an example, all the years I've had with my mom, look at the terrific caregiver she has. Look at the rest of the world, and there's so much to be grateful for, and the end comes at some point. How it happens, we don't know. We won't know, but that's sort of not the point. Just the experience of going to the heart, it's almost like been a visual for me of going to the heart to check in with what now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as practice, to not go, to not become, to come out of identification or to not go into identification with egocentric karma conditioning. Yeah, not to suffer. Mm-hmm.
So, again, let me see if I can clarify that, right, Jan? Because what I project again that you're pointing to is in the conditioned orientation, it's all about what's wrong, right? And the non-conditioned orientation, if we can call it that, is the ability to see how it is. So the specific that you just pointed to is we don't know when death comes, but it was a wonderful life. Right, and if we focus our attention on what it is right now, it's not horrific yet. It is what it is now. It was a wonderful life. Death always comes. These are how life is. If the attention is on that, rather than the imaginings and the stories that conditioning wants to have your attention on, then that to you is actually going to the heart. Right? It's a way to stay out of the suffering process and ground yourself in what is so.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And as you said that, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I had a little bit of a tangential thought, but go ahead.
Well, as you were reflecting that, and thank you for that, What I saw is all the suffering that's going on right now. And, I mean, it's so big. Mm-hmm. And that my only contribution can be, one of the main contributions I can make is to be here, to be with the heart, to be in love.
Mm-hmm.
Unconditional love, that's the biggest contribution I can make for this mm-hmm. life, this life or the world. I mean, we talk about this all the time. I know that. It sounds like I'm just repeating, but what we always say, but to, I guess for me, to experience it with this content has been terrifically helpful, that it doesn't mm-hmm.
yes.
matter. It doesn't matter what the content is by any means. Mm-hmm. And it's almost hard mm-hmm. to say that because conditioning comes in to say, what are you talking about? But I know that to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's a way in which there's an increasing awareness that the biggest contribution you can make, the participation that life is asking of all of us is to live in there's nothing wrong, right? Which another way of saying it is to be in unconditional love. And so that there's one node of intelligence that is contributing to that in this huge amount of suffering that everyone is going through, right? It really balances it out in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, just in huge gratitude and so grateful. I guess one of the lessons mm-hmm. that just occurred to me how much I miss being at center, but am so grateful that we're continuing through these, that we're having our mm-hmm. virtual groups. It's huge. So thank you.
It is. It is. It's so wonderful to come together because I would project, right, Jan, that kind of exploration that you and I just did is not easy to do. You can't just say, I want to be in unconditional love and that's the highest contribution I can make to very many people and have them understand what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, and that's what, the morning, our year-long Socratic, all reflective listening, but it doesn't matter.
Huge
gratitude.
Yeah,
that reflection is really big. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
Rebecca?
Jen and then Rebecca. Was that Rebecca?
Yes.
Okay.
It's interesting. I also wanted to look at something around family this morning because it's something I've really been realizing that there's been a shift for me in my, quote, relationship with my family that I think it's been happening for quite some time, but something around the virus and the dynamics of that have brought it to the fore. And so I've really been seeing how one way I might describe it is that it feels like, for me in general, things, it's available to have a relationship, quote, relationship with life, with people in my life that feels less personal. And as I say that, as I've been recording about it and stuff, it's almost like it's less that I need something in a relationship and more that, this sounds funny, but almost the way I was talking about it recently was almost that I'm more feel willing for it than that I want it.
Yes, I know precisely what you're pointing to, I project, because let me see if I can reflect, right?
Okay.
So relationships, there's a shift in your orientation towards your family and relationships, and the shift is less personal, less, I'm using this word needy, I project, and just more willing for it. It's not that you have to have it or you want it, it's just something that you're willing to have. It's a choice.
Yes, yes.
Mm. And would you say, Jen, that, go ahead.
Yeah. No, please.
Please.
Go ahead. Well, just that it feels like that's an interesting thing to experience that transition, because I've heard you've assisted me a number of times with other sorts of things where I feel like with that transition, which seemed like a perfectly fine and, I don't know, natural or whatever, in the sense that it just is what is and that there's an ability to just be with that, that there's conditioning takes advantage of that and wants to call it things like, or like either there's something wrong or there's something I need to figure out here, or why is this happening, or what does it mean? Or, and what I've realized very recently, because it's so interesting that I'm on calls with my family and there's quite a bit of what I guess conditioning would label discord, not literally in the, like, I bet, I don't know if anyone in my family would even see it or say it or think that's going on, or if someone else was listening in on the line. Like, in other words, it's not like arguing or, you know, anything like that at all. There's just inside of me, there's this unfamiliar experience. And just to give one tiny example, what's being facilitated inside of me around the virus doesn't seem to be what's being facilitated inside of other people in my family. And so where I might normally want to bring what's going on inside of me to the phone call and have, like, want to share that and want people to see that too and also have that experience and almost like build on that, that doesn't happen. And so that what feels like disconnect gets labeled things like disconnect and discord. Mm-hmm. And what I realized recently is it's absolutely possible for me to just practice being with that experience, not assuming anything about it, and just letting that be whatever it is and have no idea really what it is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much nuance in that because there's so many things you're seeing about it, right, Jen?
Yeah.
So
in
that place of being, so I would project that there are a lot of beliefs about what it means to be connected that are being challenged. Because on that call, you can be present and loving everyone on that call in that impersonal way that you're pointing at and not be on the same page with anyone and not feel like, and this is the ego perspective, right? So we think about connection when egos connect, through discord, yes. right? By maintaining position, there's a certain level of drama that's generated when yeah. we argue or when we feel invested in the other person understanding what we're saying.
Yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. wanting to share, because sharing is how we connect. But to have that yeah. experience of love, which isn't connected conditionally to all of what connection implies, is an mm-hmm. odd experience because we don't have it a lot.
Yeah.
Right? And so just yeah. to realize that I actually don't need to bring what I want to bring here to this mm-hmm. conversation. I'm okay mm-hmm. with that. And it doesn't actually mean that I don't love any of these people in this forum. And I don't need to maintain an ego position. And that doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That participation, it's the purest form of participation. I'm 100% here on a process level without yep. having to make it about content.
Yep.
Which, as you're pointing out, mm-hmm. conditioning doesn't, it's so counter to our conditioning, because connection mm-hmm. and intimacy and mm-hmm. Having all of our content on top of each other and in discord and drama is mm-hmm. what connection actually in the conditioned world is. But to have an impersonal, non-ego, non-position mm-hmm. place in a conversation is quite a different experience.
Yeah, it really is. It reminds me of... I keep, in so many different areas, I keep thinking of the thing of, you know, first mountains are mountains, and then mountains aren't
mm-hmm,
mountains,
yes.
and then mm-hmm, mountains are mountains mm-hmm. again. And I realized this was another one of them, where I feel like I'm in that middle stage where mountains aren't mountains. But what I know from being in it so many times with other things is it facilitates a relaxation in that middle place of this is... like a sense that, you know, mountains are mountains at first and it's exciting and we can connect and okay, we're not connecting here, so let's make sure we do connect and we don't, right? Mm-hmm. And in that middle place, it's like that the need to do that drops away, which, as I say, sort of feels unusual, you know, different, but that it feels like it's facilitating a much, an unconditional place that at least I get to experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's really the big leap, right? That the unconditional is where I am.
Yeah.
And so if I'm at, I project that when we have attention on that place, then if need and want falls away, there's no drive. There's a being, not a doing. And and there's an experience, as you're pointing to, of relaxation, because I can just be here. I don't need something. I don't need to do something. I don't need to get something, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's just as you said, facilitates the relaxation of being in touch with the unconditional, and it feels very, very connected, because what we're connected to is the only thing that we can connect to.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. Oh, my gosh, yeah, yeah.
And if I may, one last thing right there, right, Jen, is that place that we all have to watch for, where when we get to a place of non-attachment,
mm-hmm.
That is labeled as wrong, right? Because in a place of non-attachment, it's not about ego, and therefore it has to make it about itself in some way.
Yeah.
If you love someone, you've got to feel, within quotes, that attachment, that your emotional and psychological well-being is dependent on this other person, and suddenly you wake up and it isn't. There's no ego in that.
Right. 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 And that, yeah, that old, you know, in order to prove that I love, it has to be, yeah.
Whatever. In some way.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It has to involve suffering, right? Relationships.
It
has
to involve
suffering
in it. And me, I have to be at the center of it, and I have to,
yeah.
quote, care,
yeah.
and yeah, all those things. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen. Rebecca.
Yeah, that last thing is what I'm looking at, too, sort of that there has to be a me. you know, in mm-hmm. there. And the context that, or maybe it's the process that I'm looking at it in, is around when an insight or a possibility appears in awareness, and then the way that there arises a me who is going to do something with it, essentially, you know, that doesn't, it's never that clear.
mm-hmm. So you have an insight, there is an insight, that would be a better way of saying it, right? Something drops mm-hmm. in that's inciting, and then you're conscious of a someone that arises to do something about it. It's not that clear, it just feels that way.
Yes, yes. And the question that was recently put to me in the email class is there that excitement, or in this case I'm calling it insight, but it's really the same thing, I think. Does it ever happen outside of presence? And who would be the one that wants to practice with it, essentially? You know, who wants to mm-hmm. look at it, or, mm-hmm. you know, ward off ego, or, you know, anything. So there's that meme. So maybe it's not about an implementation. That often can be, but it's just about anything, about having any kind of relationship with anything, you know, mm-hmm. that is in the moment. There has to be a me who is then the subject to that object.
Mm-hmm. So another way of saying it potentially could be that there's separation. And any separation or movement from the moment is the creation of a me, because it creates that separation of subject and object.
Yes, yes. And the way that dropped in meditation was this, that me, that movement, we might say, blocks, it becomes the block to the space between the thoughts. It's like there's a me who's looking for the space between the thoughts, but that's the very mm-hmm. blockage to the space between, that's what's filling the space between the thoughts.
mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so subtle, right? Yeah.
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 Well, it
yeah,
is.
So you are aware that movement, whatever that is, the shift of attention, whatever that movement is, takes you out of the space between the thoughts. Takes you within
yes.
quotes out of the space between the thoughts, or the attention out of the space between the thoughts.
Did you say there's tension or attention?
Attention. It takes
yes.
the attention out.
Because
at this level of looking, we can't find words that are articulative of that experience, right?
Right. But I did see an example. Yes, it's so subtle. Mm-hmm. But here, let me try out this example and see if. So there was, I went to an experience of when I saw the possibility of going to graduate school. So it's like, oh my gosh. You know, it just kind of, it dropped in that I said, this could be possible for me. And I was very excited about it. And this was years ago, by the way, many, many years ago. And there was a form in place to follow, you know? So it wasn't like I knew, it was obvious what the next step would be, is you line up the support from the husband, you make the application, you get the money, and you apply and you go. You know, there was an established, very clear form mm-hmm. that was in actual life, in actual presence. I kept getting the yeses, and that was the how. So there, it was like there didn't need to be that artificial me coming in to say, well, how can we make this happen? Because it was just clear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I'm following, the insight happens, there's excitement, and then there's just the what now, what now, what now, what now. And life provides the what now, and there's a clarity. So there's no movement into the identification with someone who has to figure it out and execute these steps. It just flowed.
Exactly. And what I'm wondering as I'm looking at this is, and this may be a noodling question, but it feels very interesting, which is, now, was there a what now that was so obvious because there was no me, or was there no me because it was obvious that there was a what now, you know, that it was a step by step? In other words, it's the same way when I saw the possibility of moving to the monastery, it's like there, it was like, oh, well, you just write in and start the, you know, you start it and see what happened. And there was no suffering in any of those, in any of these steps, you know? And I'm looking at it in terms of what's going on in the world, and I project and I hear, and sometimes I even feel this frustration of, well, actually, I don't really feel it that often, to be real honest, but I hear it, and I hear other people, and, you know, I can go to that place in myself that, you know, projecting, but of a, what do we do? What do we do about this, you know? And I think that's where everybody is coming to the one form that we do have in place, which is we vote. We vote. That's the form that's already been established, you know, and so everybody's, we know to go there. But what I suspect we who practice awareness we tap into is possibility with a capital P. Do you know, of like, if there is anything to be done, that it will drop in that emptiness besides the form that's already established, if that makes any sense.
Yes, because what I'm projecting you're pointing to is, it's so subtle, right? It's just what's not. Just because a form is established, that does not necessarily mean that's the form that will follow. Our best opportunity is to just stay here and move with whatever life form is going to be in the next moment. That's truly what we, within quotes, do. Our best option of possibility with the P is just to be.
Yeah.
To be carried by life in the moment.
That's it. That's so well said. That is it, Ignan, in a nutshell. To be carried by life in each moment. Each moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're practicing. I project with all these. Well, so, you know, in the email classes, I think, well, who is that that's doing that? Well, who is that that's doing that? You know, and who is that that feels that way? And she's pointing to that over and over again, it seems like, to say, because like I started out with, that seems to be the block to the space between the thoughts, that wonderful emptiness that I think we are, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I project you're going to be writing a response and getting something back from the guide. So it'll be fun to see.
Mm-hmm. What was that last thing? So what?
I said it'll be fun to see, right?
Oh,
this exploration. Yeah.
Yeah, it is so fun. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Phil?
Phil.
Yeah, speaking of being carried by life, reminds me what? Something I've been looking at, and that is, maybe it was last Monday, I woke up into this kind of odd place for me. Felt odd. I felt like, what's wrong? Something's wrong, you know? And I was found that as I got up and started doing the morning practices and stuff, that I felt really out of sorts, you know, that everything seemed like it went wrong. You know, I dropped things, I couldn't focus, all this kind of stuff going on. And I noticed that as I was kind of moving through this, I said to myself, I'm really identified with this. And I just kept noticing, and I did, I used the practice tools, And, you know, and I was still feeling the way I was feeling. And afterwards, now this came, I noticed this a couple of days afterwards, that what was going on, of course, conditioning was making, came on after a while and said, you know, was saying, there's something wrong. I mean, it started out that way, but then it conditioning butted in with, really, there's something wrong. And then I could see, and this is what I saw later, that I was using the practice tools, of course, to fix the something wrong. So I'd become somebody trying to fix it by using the tools.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So let's see if I'm following, right?
Uh-huh.
So there's a waking up into feeling, into not feeling, into something odd. This feels odd. This is not whatever. And then using the practice tools in order to assist yourself in that process. And then it drops in later that really what was going on was the something wrong. There was an identification with something wrong, and the practice tools were being used in order to address the something wrong.
Yeah, make me feel better, you know, to help me get out of this. And this way I was feeling, because there was a lot of anxiety building up, and I don't usually have anxiety, and but that's what I called whatever this I was feeling, you know. And it just kept, felt like it just kept building instead of going away, to such a point where I just, this was somewhere in, maybe, I don't know if it was, no, it was before noon, I just finally said, I can't do it. I can't do this. You know, and I said, so life, you have to do it. You have to lead my life. I mean, I couldn't even, must have been even before breakfast. I don't know, because I was trying to fix my breakfast. Things kept spilling and doing this. I said, life, you have to do it. I can't do it. And it was like there was no way I could do it. And it was like I had to just let life do it. And so I just kind of relaxed, and life started doing it. I mean, it started fixing breakfast, and it didn't spill things, and it did it just right. And, you know, as the day went on, it did other things, and it didn't. But I was noticing, and here's the interesting part, that the sensations were still somewhat still in my body. But they didn't, the first I was really suffering over it, but then it wasn't like a suffering. It was just there, and life was continuing, you know, managing my life. And I thought, this is what it is. And it happened, you know, I think life lives my life a lot of time, most of the time. But this was a real conscious experience of it, of life living my life. It was kind of really an amazing thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I project, I think this is what you're saying, right, Phil, in looking at the whole thing, is that identification, that feeling off, gets translated into something wrong, which then goes into the process of having to fix it in order for you to feel for me to, within quotes, feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
But as that, I mean, you're reaching for a practice tool, so at some point, there's a way in which the awareness drops in to surrender the process of trying to fix something wrong from the same process of something wrong. So the surrender is, I'm accepting how it is. I'm not attempting to make it different. And so the suffering drops, and there's the ability to be with whatever it is in acceptance.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what went on. And what the point, the part I didn't see till maybe a few days later, was that by, you know, either using the practice tools in that way to, and I know this, but I didn't realize I was doing it, you know, at the time, mm-hmm. to try mm-hmm. to make myself feel better or to fix something or whatever, that's actually what was going on that kept it in place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So it's a very nuanced place, right? So we use the practice tools because when I'm identified, what I'm attempting to do is to disidentify. But there's a way in which that process can be taken over where the tool is still used, but the reason, the process from which the tool is used is what you're pointing to. I want to feel better. I don't want this. I don't want this sensation. I want to get out of what is, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember, that reminded me of the first time I noticed that years ago. I was at the monastery, we were still in tents, and I was washing dishes and didn't want to, you know. So I was washing them, but didn't want to. And I thought, I have to accept this. And I kept saying that, and finally, I don't know what happened. I took a breath or something, and it all went away. And I thought, oh, I didn't even have to accept this. I just accepted it, and it went away. And
right,
that was,
because
to me, a real clear difference of the two different places.
Very, very different places, right? Because one is I should be okay with this experience, even though I don't, but okay with the experience. In other words, it's an opposition, right, that we're pointing to, Phil, which is I'm washing these dishes and I don't want to. The acceptance is really I'm washing these dishes and I don't want to, not I'm washing these dishes and I should be okay with washing these dishes.
Exactly, and I think that's what happened again. And
yeah.
it was just the first time that I really saw those two places.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Monday, at that point in time, I didn't realize, you know, the recording or the breathing, just breathe, you know, was there to, I was trying to make it happen. And that's all
mm-hmm.
So it really, I was just mm-hmm. just so happy to have that experience because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a gorgeous experience of watching life live my life, which
mm-hmm.
life lives my life, like I said, I think most of the time, but I'm maybe not as conscious or watching it do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it was a, you know, real good experience of seeing how I got stuck in that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you learn from it, right? Learn
yeah.
so much from it, especially that the surrender, the surrender is something that also happens. It's not something I do, but life
no.
does for me.
Right. And there was no recourse. I had to give up, you see, at that point.
Yeah,
Either that or go back to bed, you know.
That's right. Exactly. It's very hard to describe because we get confused about who's doing what, which is, I project
mm-hmm.
what Rebecca was pointing to, that Sherry is pointing to in the email class. Who does that? Right?
Right.
Or what happens? And from within the system, it feels like I surrendered. But if we just look at it, surrender happened.
Exactly, because I didn't
fell
say
away
that.
Was ego,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because as you say that, I remember I didn't even say that. I just said, I can't do this. I give up. You
mm-hmm.
have to do it or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
mm-hmm.
and it just started happening. Because otherwise,
mm-hmm.
it what might have been in that same camp of trying to just make it better, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Precisely. Precisely.
Yeah. So thank you. It was just such a interesting, very interesting experience,
mm-hmm.
and And I, too, want to tell you thank you every month for those musings. And this one I really love. I really love all of them every time they come in. But I'm just so grateful for those.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Carolyn?
Carolyn.
Hey, I'm looking at something, at a response in the Socratic email class. I was looking at a relationship with energy, and the response from the guide included a phrase, the doing which precludes being.
Mm-hmm.
And
the doing that precludes being.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there was, it wasn't even something seen. It was more of a felt sense of a something moving underneath me. In a, like what I was standing on was no longer firm ground.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And what I saw in this and what I've been recording and listening about is all of the unspoken and unwritten contracts that have been made with ego.
Mm-hmm.
And recording and listening outs all of those.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, they're no longer hidden to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there are a couple of things you just said, if I'm tracking, right, Carolyn, we explore a process in guidance, and something that the guide says just blasts through all of those hidden assumptions, right, those hidden contracts.
Yes.
And we sense it. And until we pick up the recorder and talk about that experience, we actually don't see what was hidden from us. And so we have to do that recording process in order to bring into conscious awareness that which was unseen.
Yes. Yes. That's it.
Because we're always within it, right? So if we're within it, you can't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a delicious process.
It is. And just a deep gusto for all of the opportunities, the musings article, the Socratic email class, I'm in a coaching class for Safe and Privileged Environment. It's just I feel so loved, and to respond in love is just the best. It's just the best thing ever. So, thank you.
It is absolutely. Thank you, Carolyn. Because I think what you're pointing to, at least I project it, when we surround ourselves with practice, that's really our best opportunity to experience being called by life. And to respond to that call from life, which is such a loving experience.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's harking to be seen.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's I can only project that life is as delighted to be seen as I am.
Oh, precisely. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. As delighted to be seen as I am. Yeah.
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 Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Margaret?
So, and thank you so much, and thank you, Sangha. I've been looking at something that's been really, just this morning, something dropped in about it. It's this saying that we have, that we will do for the love of others what we would not do for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And on and off during practice, over the years, it that will arise almost like a koan, because there's been this part of it that's like, we will do for the love of others, and then this part comes in about, well, what about me? Aren't I doing it for myself too, or something along those lines? And this time when it came up, I've just been sitting with it, like for the last several weeks, on and off, in sort of with respect to what's been going on in the Socratic email class for me. And what showed up yesterday was just looking at, well, when I first started this practice, it was like what was there for me was just this tremendous love that was was in the room, was in Sherry, was the whole experience of being in practice was just this tremendous love and just that being there. And that's why, you know, I keep practicing, and that's what had me keep practicing through all the resistance and everything. And then this morning, what actually dropped in was sort of reframing, wanting to reframe that saying to, we will be for the love of others what we would not maybe be willing to be for ourselves. And that just sunk into my heart.
So, Margaret, I'm not sure I'm following, so let me see if I can attempt to connect the dots there. So being in this practice, the experience of being in practice is being in love, right? You're present to the love there is in the practice, in the Sangha, in Sherry, and being there. And so mm-hmm. practicing for you was for that love, right? Through the resistance, yes. that's the love that I'm practicing for. And are you saying that it sunk in for you that there is no separation in that you'll do for the love of others? Because if you're practicing for this love, you're actually practicing for love, for yourself included. Is that the reframe?
And it's also, I guess, because we've been saying, we've been discussing all about being rather than doing. Mm-hmm. And it just, maybe because of that, it sort of dropped in that I'm, not I, but this being is being here for all. That's what the love is for.
Not doing, but being.
Being.
Yeah. Yes. So the and reframe actually is that the experience of love is because you're there, not because you're doing anything.
Well, yes, that's helpful too. it's just, I guess, also recognizing that there was at times this sort of ego wanting to noodle that rather than allowing it to just, that phrase to just be there as a koan, you know, mm-hmm. was to solve mm-hmm. it and answer
mm-hmm.
something about it. And,
mm-hmm.
and in looking at what instead was just present around it, what would arise, it just seems like ego has never wanted me, of course, to see that's why I'm here, is because of the love.
So you're noticing the ego process around noodling the koan and not allowing you to be present to why you're here, which is for the love, that being is love.
Yes, and you know, I mean, it's being is love, and it's for this being too. And what's dropping in is that
doing the recording and listening class, or and being with that process of recording and listening, I'm experiencing that tremendous love for this being more and more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's just, you know, more support for that awareness of the love.
Yeah.
For all.
Well, I don't know if this is what you're saying, right, Margaret. The more we practice presence, the more we are present to presence, which is an experience of love. Now, the words that we use are to explore or articulate that experience is hard, because we say the more there's love for this being, but really just that there's more being there is, the more love there is. And that's much more inclusive, right? Because once we start to say, I love this person, or I don't love this person, or the love, everything is happening in awareness. So the person is an illusion. And so it's hard. Yes. It's so hard to start to nuance those things or pass those things. And so just that awareness, as I practice presence and I'm more present to presence, love is the experience that I'm having for all beings.
Yeah. And what dropped in for me as you were saying that is just this delight that I have in an image from workshops we've done years ago about just being this little tiny drop in the ocean that can see all the other drops somehow, or is at the surface looking at everything and just being so in bliss about it all.
Yeah.
And that was okay. You know,
Drops of bliss in the ocean of bliss. That's a good orientation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
Sarah. Hello?
Sarah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, along those lines, I had this experience last week that was so wonderful of, you know, I don't know where it came from really, but, you know, if listening to the shows or just life, but this sense that life was so intricate and, what are the words for it? Just like the only accurate experience would be awe of the complexity and exuberance and abundance that's all around, and the ego story about lack or defects, or like it was just so patently false. Like it couldn't be true, and it almost seemed somewhat comical, you know, because I love it in a way, because it so tells you, it's like it's a its own little I can't find the words for it. It's like a divining rod in a way, like pointing you, like you're so out of the truth right now. You know, if you're in that small mindset, and I mean, I can be there, but it's so helpful to know, like, this, if you're not in awe right now of other people, of yourself, of the beauty of the world, you're actually not in the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful to get there. Right, Sarah? Because for a lot of our lives, until we get to that place, the conditioned perspective is so believable. But I project what you're pointing us to is when we're intimate with life, and intimate is a good word, because we know it so well, right? We know its complexity and its texture and the experience of witnessing its magnificence and what that feels like. And it's part of the marrow of our awareness and bones, if you could say it that way. Then when that small, conditioned, untrue perspective offers itself to us, it's actually a clue that if I'm believing that, another way of saying it, we usually go for our beliefs over our experience, but it's almost impossible not to go with our experience because the belief seems so comical, as you said, or inconsequential compared to what I'm experiencing as what is true.
I love that life itself is showing you that what is true.
It's that, revelation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like there's nothing you have to do, you know, other than just watch it and watch and know, you know, like your body is telling you it isn't true. It's a wonderful, I think somebody said it earlier, like there's just this sense of support and love in the world itself that is holding you and protecting you in this. Protecting is not the right word, but,
Well, it's the discovery of the nature of true nature.
And was that the way the nirvana, like awareness of awareness, is like that's the
joy of intelligence, knowing itself.
So thank you.
Thank you. All right. I believe we have a couple of minutes, but we'll probably go over, so that's our time. Thank you, everybody.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.